Welcome to episode 40 of the Golf Betting System podcast. We are covering the PGA Championship from Belrive Country Club in St. Louis, Missouri. It's the 100th PGA Championship. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Previewer at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have European Tour expert Paul Williams and resident podcast pundit Barry O'Hanrahan. Good evening, chaps.
Evening, gents.
Good evening, guys.
GolfBettingSystem.co.uk, that's our website. Twitter handles, I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. We are available on Podbean, iTunes, TuneIn for Android, Spotify, Player FM, Podtail. And we're now on Stitcher. So whatever way you take in your podcast, we're available to you. Naturally, subscribe or follow the podcast and tell your friends about the show. Right, we had a week off last week, chaps. It was all good, all very replenishing from an energy perspective. And we come straight back to the PGA Championship, the last major of 2018.
Glory's last shot, eh?
Glory's, well, it won't be next year, but... being played at the Belrive Country Club, which we don't know too much about, do we? I know that we've seen some majors here in the past, the most recent of which saw Nick Price win. And then 2008, after the redesign, it's a Trent Jones original course, so it's an old-style tree-lined Parkland golf course. It looks pretty nice. I mean, I'll ask you guys for your views, but from what I've seen, it looks pretty nondescript to some of the recent major championship hosting courses that we've seen. And it then had a Rhys Jones redesign before the 2008 BMW Championship, which, of course, was that was the in 2008, and that was the third leg of the four-legged PGA Tour FedEx Cup playoffs. I think that was the inaugural year. So there is something to work from here. A par 70, 7,300 yards plus, two par 5s, but I do see quite a few short par 4s as well. So anything around that kind of 360, there's definitely a drivable one on the back nine. And there's a couple early on in the round where if you're a serious hitter, you know, the likes of what we were seeing at Bridgestone last week, and you're firing it 400 yards off the tee, which we know that a lot of these guys can do now, you know, some of these holes are going to be quite gettable, I think.
Yeah, as long as it's not overly soft from the rain they get before the event starts. But
there's no guarantee of that either. I'm seeing about 60 to 65% for Tuesday night into Wednesday morning. It was very wet there last week, mind.
Yeah.
So I think there will be a little bit of give in the cut in the soil. Surely Dustin Johnson's going to win it, isn't he?
Did you see his tweet earlier today saying, or from last night, saying that his game was just about where he wanted it to be? And yeah, from that final round yesterday, where he looked at one point as if he was going to come through and post some score that was really going to contend, didn't he? Couldn't quite do it in the end. What was he, 7-under through 11 or 12 or whatever the number was? And you know, had some chances as well, didn't he? Coming home, you know, there was some makeable putts there that he couldn't quite finish off. But he's, when he's in that kind of form, when he's in that kind of mood, he's a formidable player, isn't he?
We thought, you know, that he was going to cruise through Carnoustie. You know, the place looked dead set for him.
Yeah.
And he ends up hating the 18th hole and missing the cut. If he turns up with his B plus game, I think he he's going to win, or he'd be very damn close to winning. Yeah. So it's just it just depends if he's a little bit burnt out now or if he's just getting started.
He's not watertight at the majors, though, is he? One major championship title after all these years.
Yep. Oh no, he's let a few slip, hasn't he?
He knows how to throw a few away.
Yeah, a lot of open championships have slipped by the wayside. But, you know, he's a better player now. He's been backed off the boards at the moment, isn't he? So
If you look at the titles, I'm playing devil's advocate, because, okay, he wins by seven potentially, but if you look at the titles he's won this year, you know, he won the FedEx St Jude, you know, that was, you know, he went in a head-to-head with Andrew Putnam, and he won the RBC Canadian Open, which wasn't exactly packed full of quality. So I think there's chances there for a lot of players. I'll tell you where I'm coming from with this. If you look at Camilo Villegas, who won here in 2008, and you look at Nick Price, who won here in 92, there's a few courses that kind of stand out for me. Villegas has won at the Honda Classic at PGA National. He's also finished second there. And at that BMW Championship I keep harking back to in 08, Anthony Kim was right in the mix as well, the swashbuckling Anthony Kim. Now, Kim's finished second at PGA National as well. But we go to TPC Sawgrass. Now, that isn't a hunting ground for Dustin, as we know. Camillo's won there. He's finished third there. Jim Furyk, who finished runner-up to Camillo in 08, has finished second, third and fourth there amidst a host of T20s. Top tens, rather. Nick Price also won the Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass. So that's a very strong course correlation to me. Now, that doesn't work for Dustin. But conversely, Villegas has finished third at St Jude, as did Dudley Hart, who weirdly finished in the top three here that year. So that works very nice because of the Zoysia fairways that we're seeing this week. So that works well for Dustin. So there's kind of negatives and pluses in the course correlation kind of stats I'm seeing, and that was just enough to put me off at sort of 10-1.
Yeah, it doesn't scream absolute 100% fit from what you've just said there, does it? You know, there's better players out there with a better Sawgrass record, with a better Eastlake record, with a better, you know, overall portfolio of course records that you're looking for. If indeed those, you know, those courses, and you know, you're drawing conclusions potentially off of two isolated events that are what, 16 years apart or whatever the number is. And the course has changed a bit in the meantime, but I've not run out there and put the house on DJ this week, I must say, even though he's got clearly a cracking chance to win.
The player I thought before last night's round who was calling my name louder than DJ was Rory. Because if you think about Rory, winner at Eastlake, winner at PGA National, has a decent, fairly good record at TPC Sawgrass, although it takes away his attacking tendencies. But, you know, I just... He's just not hitting greens like he used to do. It's his short game and putting that's actually making him contend at the moment.
Yeah, his wedge game is not dialed in. Yeah. For me, I really do. I rate him to have a great week this week. You know, there just seems to be a lot of good things bubbling under and just so close to clicking.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is whether he can get the wedge game dialed in this week between now and the start of play. You know, with these greens, you know, being kind of multi-level undulating, you're going to want to get the ball into the right part of the greens. And, you know, if he's spinning it back down a level and leaving himself like 40, 45 footers instead of looking at 8, 10 footers for birdie, I think that's the key for me for him this week.
I could see Rory having a very good week.
But is he going to be able to find
just
that?
Just purely from a course correlation perspective. His results and where they fall suit, for me, they are better suit than Dustin's.
But do you think, you know, given what we've seen from Rory, and, you know, ultimately it's the silly mistakes or the mistakes that he's making from, you know, these contending and decent positions that are preventing him from winning these events? And are you going to be able to, you know, there's no room for that when you're talking about a major championship with, you know, playing against the very best players in the world. Can you afford to do that? I'm not sure you can. Can he plug those gaps? Can he find what's missing in the space of a few days ahead of the US PGA?
Well,
I'm not convinced either, to be honest.
If Jimmy Johnson was on Rory McIlroy's bag, do you think he'd be playing better? We've gone completely off route here, completely off piste. But that's. I think he needs a strong caddy, someone that calms him down and actually says to him, "Rory, this is what we're going to do. This is the strategy we're going to play," rather than him kind of having a yes man on the bag and he's just over. You know, he's just making all of the decisions.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Someone's just carrying his bag.
It doesn't. I mean, I don't think it's a terrible thing. He seems to be in a pretty kind of getting himself into a pretty decent place mentally as well these days. You know, trying to talk himself into playing it for fun and just taking a slightly different angle at it. I mean, look, it's working in all, but he's not getting a win or two. But that's not to say he doesn't go out and do it this week. It just it feels like something's been bubbling under and waiting to happen. I mean, he could go and shoot 80-80, and that's what could have been bubbling under and waiting to happen. But, Look, he's. I think he's going to be in the mix here come Sunday, and it's whether he can convert from that position. You know, there's that kind of pressure of or internalized pressure of a few years of not winning a major. Mm. You know, when he won those, when he went on a string of winning majors, everyone just thought he'd just keep ticking them off at one a year.
Yeah. Would you back him at 12s, Barry?
It might. It's interesting.
If he starts well and you're on Betfair Exchange, you know it's something you can lay straight off.
Well, yeah. One thing we know with Rory and a bit like DJ as well, he can get off to a flying start in a major. And these boys can, you know, as you say, if you've backed them on the exchange and they do start flying very quickly on Thursday, then their price can quickly halve or more.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we're talking about his short game and his putting being the strength at the moment. And that doesn't necessarily hold, does it? You know, what if that disappears? You know, he has a bad week around the greens. He has a bad week on the greens. And if the rest of his game is where it has been, he misses the cut. Or he doesn't perform, he doesn't contend.
Trend-wise, PGA champions come into the event and they've actually got the ball under control from tee to green.
Yeah.
And he hasn't.
No. I mean,
it's his short game that's saving him.
Yeah. I mean, you wrote about it in your original pre-preview, didn't you, about the importance of having a good week at the Bridgestone. You know, strong strokes gained tee to green is another one of the big factors.
You know, how often have you seen a strokes gained of 1.9 across the event last week? Yeah, putting was his strongest category.
Mm. Yes.
Approach, he was negative, and a big chunk negative as well. Mm. As you said, that's his approach play and his wedges, Barry.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some really misses that were kind of. Yeah, and the scary thing was that he looked to be a bit mystified by why they were missing long or short. So it's just something he's not putting his finger on. He's a super talented guy, and he might be able to figure it out. I'd be more tempted just to maybe hang on and see, can I catch him at maybe 20s in running or something like that if he's a few off or somebody else gets a hot start.
Yeah.
Or maybe if I'm getting boosted a little bit to 14s or 16s. But, yeah, I mean, let's go start talking about a few other people. You have.
Well, this is where I am. I put my preview out. It was released mid-afternoon, wasn't it, Paul? This is where I'm at. I'm keeping it dead simple. I'm using the old trends of top 28 at the Bridgestone. I do like to see a decent strokes gained tee to green performance at Firestone if we've got it. And when I'm reading about, you know, these greens being quite vicious and they're very sectioned, so, you know, if you've got an approach game that's getting you close to the hole, you can make birdies, but you know, if you're not in those quadrants of the greens, those sections, you know, it is three putt territory.
Yeah, it's not just hitting the green, is it? You've got to be hitting the right part of these greens,
because they're quite chunky greens. I think they're averaging 8,000 square feet. So yeah, GIR isn't going to be the be all this week. It's going to be proximity to hole. I love as well. I do like this Zoysia angle. Just because, you know, the way I'm seeing. So I'm keeping it dead simple this week. I'm thinking Justin Thomas again, week on week. You look at where he's played well in the past. You look how he played last week. If he plays that well again, he's going to be a tough man to beat. I do also love Brooks Koepka this week. You look at his record at St Jude. He's very good on Zoysia. He did well at Eastlake last year. He's a major championship monster. And if you look at those two from last week, Justin Thomas was first for proximity to hole. Brooks Koepka was fourth. Brooks also top GIR. And if you look at it from a tee to green perspective, Thomas was fourth at strokes gained and Koepka was first. I just think they're the two at the top of the market, as opposed to DJ, who, for me, they stand out by a country mile. And then a bit further down, it's interesting, five of the last six PGA champions have been at 45-1 or less.
Yeah.
The one outside of that was Jimmy Walker. Captain Cod, is it? Was it Captain Cod? He's won 25, and maybe it was a long day or something, but I just, Tony Finau for me, he's just playing some great golf. I think he needs to remain motivated to try and get a US Ryder Cup spot. The competition around those final spots are absolutely immense.
But he needs to putt well, doesn't he? His tee to green game for a long time has been very strong.
His putting last week was quite reasonable, actually. It wasn't scarily bad. He was 17th for putts per GIR.
Yeah.
So it's decent.
That's good for him.
Oh, it is good for him. And the other thing with Finau last week, if you look at his approach play, he was fifth for proximity to hole. And he was 13th for strokes going tee to green. So, you know, we know that he's top 10 at the last three majors.
Yeah.
If he really wants to get into that Ryder Cup team, for me, Mickelson and Woods are a lock. I'm reading lots of stuff about Woods. He's basically saying he wants to take DeChambeau as his partner and play with him. So, you know, you're down to, what you're down to then? 7, 8, 9, 10. You're down to two spots out of five players. One of them's likely to be Simpson, because he could get that eighth spot after this PGA Championship. There's a line in the sand. Then all of a sudden, they're fighting over one spot, one captain's pick.
Yeah.
And we've got the quality of Cantlay, Kyle Stanley. Obviously, we've still got Matt Kuchar in the mix. So, I think Finau would be very disappointed to miss out on that Ryder Cup team. And that's probably another motivation for him. So yeah, they're the three I've gone for. I'm going to publish some longer shots that we can discuss a little bit later on, just in terms of some triple digits and people that interest you. What about you boys? You tell the listeners who you're into.
Go on, you go first, Ben.
Well, like as you guys know, over the weekend I texted and just kind of said, how do you guys see Finau fitting in with this course? So I kind of had him in my head as well, and nice to hear a few of the stats from the weekend kind of working in his favour.
Quite nice.
I mean, it's a classical course, you know, tree lined, and as Paul, you were saying off air, that, you know, would have a similar enough vibe to Augusta.
I think there's correlations you can draw with it for sure.
Yeah, I mean, not huge, but you know, just even a loose enough one. You know, yeah. So Finau went well at that. Obviously, playing, you know, brilliant golf for the whole year, and really does seem to turn it on at the majors. So, at you know 40-1, it's a nice price, and yeah, so he's one of my guys.
He was 45-1 about 10 minutes before I published.
Okay. You know, you never know. There's a lot of.
I've got one for you, Barry. If you join Royal Panda, I haven't a clue where they're based. You can get him for 50-1.
That sounds like a takeout.
That also looks like a win-only price, so I'm not sure you're getting much each-way value on that. But
I might just hang on. There seems to be plenty of competition between the bookies this week. I'm sure we'll get on to a little chat about the bookies. Yeah. So he might just drift a little bit. So I don't. I just hope one of the big tipsters doesn't tip him in the meantime. Mm. So I might have to take a little bite of him now. You know, just on the tree-lined course angle, Alex Noren seems to play classical-type golf courses very well. He's been a little bit quiet and under the radar, but that means his price is kind of tasty. Mm. So, you know, winner at Wentworth.
Bent grass greens this week, that'll suit him.
Yeah, so he's out there at 50 and 55s in one spot. So, you know, he's interests me. As always... Ricky is interesting too. I mean, I think a lot of things for Ricky stack up quite well. His par 4 scoring, strokes gained tee to green, strokes gained approach, good performance at Augusta, seems to be figuring out in the majors. But you know, he's a little bit wobbly now the last couple of performances. Mm. With the Open Championship, when he just had that. He went to pieces, really.
We were on him at the US Open, and for two rounds, he was right in the mix. And then it got to that Saturday, and he just absolutely fell apart. Like 80, was it 78, 82 or something? And then he goes and shoots the low score, or second lowest score on the closing Sunday.
Yeah, there's that one round in there that's just scuppering.
That's mental, isn't it? That's mental.
It's a bit strange. It just seems a bit not, you know... Unlike him, I guess. Especially when you put himself in those great positions. Again, with Ricky, the problem is he's just so popular with the punters. His price is always way shorter than it should be. Like, I mean, it's in places he's shorter than Jordan Spieth, or it's the same as Jordan Spieth. So I'll have to weigh it up whether I go with Ricky or not. I have a few others, but they're kind of long shots, so maybe I'll hold them until a little bit later in the show.
Mm, yeah. I mean, for me, I've only backed one player sub 100-1 so far, and that's Bubba Watson. And you know, I look at some of the names on the list in the kind of 50, 60, 70, 80, whatever to one bracket, and. You know, Bubba's drifting in the market. He finished 31st last week. It wasn't a good performance by any stretch. But the guy's won three times this year, and you know it seems to be unless he's winning the week before, he's been disregarded almost by the bookies. And if you go back to Justin Thomas last year, he'd won three times on the tour before he won his US PGA title. You know, having this incoming winning form is. No bad thing whatsoever. He's won four times on bent grass greens. If you go back to 2008, the BMW Championship, which was played here, you go back, Bubba was a maiden at the time. You know, he was nowhere near the player that he is now. He's clearly won his major championships, his green jackets in the meantime. But he arrived here, he had a poor couple of days to begin with, then he shot 66, 65 over the weekend here. And that was the joint best on show. No one beat him. No one scored better than Bubba over the weekend here back in 2008. I've seen a lot of commentary on this. It seems to suit a right-to-left shot shape similar to Augusta. You know, I'm not sure it's quite as pronounced as that, but there's certainly a small bias there from what I've been reading. I think there will be some correlation with you know, the tree-lined courses like Augusta, again, particularly with the bent grass greens, particularly with the big multi-tiered greens. You know, I think there's a lot to like about him. And you look at the price there. I took him on the exchange at 65 over the weekend. you can currently get 66-1 if you're willing to take fewer each way places. You can take 60, I believe, at the moment, with eight places each way, 50 odds with 365. So there's lots of different options there. But I look at the names around him at the kind of 40-50-1 bracket, and I see no reason why you wouldn't skip down and take a chance on Bubba, given his winning form. Lots to like there, in my view. Lots to like.
I do think he's completely overpriced. It's ridiculous.
Mm. Yeah, and we know that, you know, there's, again, these classical tracks, a lot of them demand a shot-shaping ability. And if there's one player who can shape his shots, it's Bubba Watson.
When they had the media day, and Thomas went over there to you know, be part of it, some of his comments were, it's the kind of course where you can really cut corners.
Mm.
And, you know, that shouts, doesn't it? DJ, Bubba, McIlroy, Thomas, these kind of guys that can really take advantage with the high, you know, they're at high apex, big power.
Yeah.
I can see Bubba. I mean, you know, if he's suiting 66, 65, so 11 under over the weekend when they're here in 08.
Yeah, so no one beat that score. It's, you know, he was, you know, a fraction of the player he is now. Back then, so it's difficult to draw conclusions from a couple of rounds, and we know with Bubba he's the kind of player that he reacts and performs on the courses that he likes. Do we have much insight into how he really how he really got on, you know, 10 years ago? No, we don't, but those two rounds would suggest that there's something positive in there. And given some of the paltry prices on offer at the top of the market, I think, you know, at that kind of price, he's worth taking a chance on, in my view. So yeah, he's the only one that I've backed at that kind of level.
Yeah,
it's a mad price. He won only 7 weeks ago.
Yeah. It's crazy price.
Yeah.
Bigger prices, bombs. Oh, Thorbjørn Olsen, he's been absolutely slaughtered. Yeah, as a few Kyle of them. Stanley,
all the guys that performed last week have been hammered, haven't they? Aaron Wise.
It doesn't always transfer either.
No. For some reason, Gary Woodland's been hammered in as well, which, given that we were on him last week, Barry, and screaming at the TV screen throughout the weekend, that was it's a bit of a surprise to see a sea of blue on him. But
I've been on him the last 2 weeks. He's... I almost kind of have to stick with him now, because if I jump off him, especially he's available at 140 on Bet365 with eight places. Yeah, definitely happy to throw a couple of euro on him at that price, just in case he does click. Because it's obvious that he's playing some very good golf, because he's putting the scores up and then he just goes and I don't know what happens. Like, goes off into daydream land and puts a few bogeys together. So. But, you know, that was the kind of thing that Brooks Koepka was doing before he won the US Open last year. I remember he's putting together lots of red numbers, but he was dropping in doubles and runs of bogeys, and he cleaned it all up in time to win the US Open.
Yep.
So I'm not saying Woodland's of the same level as Koepka, but just kind of reminded, you know, reminiscent of that kind of lead in. Siwoo Kim has come back on my radar after breaking our hearts earlier in the year.
Yeah, Paul and I were discussing this off mic.
Yeah, he's on my shortlist.
He's coming, Siwoo.
It's, you know, and he's back up at that, you know, back up at tasty prices again. Mm. Not quite the 200-1 we had on him, but he's close enough.
160s with eight places I saw earlier.
We talked about TPC Sawgrass, didn't we? Cameo, Nick Price. Mm-hmm. We know that Siwoo won there last year. There's something in that.
Yeah,
he's got a top 10 at East Lake as well.
Yep.
He should have won Heritage.
I hope he's also playing the Wyndham Championship next week, because we're back to Bermuda.
Yeah, that's potentially one of the detractors, isn't it? He hasn't got that much tangible form on bent grass greens. That's not to say he can't play by any stretch, but most of his best works come on Bermuda, isn't it?
It has. I can see Siwoo. I like that bet.
I'll tell you what, one name that caught my eye on that kind of level, simply because of the price, was Sergio Garcia.
Oh, mate,
There's hundreds of one out there on Sergio.
What's this situation then, boys, with Thomas in your gut, in your mind? Because clearly, you know, he's going to be an awkward scenario as well, isn't he? Because Casey might not qualify automatically. Yeah. That then puts him under pressure, because Stenson's apparently, although it's not being reported, carrying an injury.
Yeah.
And then you've got Sergio's horribly out of form.
Well, is he? I mean, look at Sergio, right? Last week, if he'd have shot 65 in the final round, he shot 75, right? If he'd have shot 65 in the final round, which was out there, there was the 64s out there. He shoots 65, he finishes tied fifth with Koepka. What price is he going into this week? 33? 33s. 33?
Yeah.
He shoots 75. Yeah. He shoots 75, he has one bad round. He's 100 to 1. You know, generally he's 80, 90, but there's 100 to 1 out there.
He was he shot 67, didn't he, round three last week? Which was fifth best in field, yeah. So he's not a million miles away. And I'm seeing a slither 100 to 1 about him.
Yeah. He's won the Masters, he's won the Players, which you were talking about. I don't know, that looks too big to me. It does look too big to me.
He needs to perform, doesn't he?
Mm.
Suppose, I mean, Bjorn probably has said it to him. Come on, you've got some big tournaments coming up. You need to perform. And I wrote this in my piece before the Canadian Open, where he started really well. I think he was 5 under. Then he should have been 6 under and missed a 3-footer on the last. And then he birdied the next on his opening hole on round two. And then he just fell apart. And he missed the cut. And you just think, wow. Yeah, it's a big, big fall from grace, really. But you think it through. He's outside the FedEx Cup 125, I think, or he's there or thereabouts. He might have to play the Wyndham Championship next week.
Yep.
Might have to.
If he wants to play the playoffs, yeah.
Because otherwise, he's got no playoff activity. And he's where's he going to play in Europe?
Well, they're small little shitty events, aren't they, between now and...
exactly.
Nothing much.
So, you know, I can see from a motivation perspective, he needs something and he needs it immediately. Otherwise, he's creating a huge problem both for himself and for Captain Bjorn.
Yep.
Who would you pick, Barry?
It's genuinely a dilemma with the form he's in. And you thought he'd kind of turned it around with that little back-to-back weeks, you know, whether it's around... two top tens or one was just outside the top 10.
Yeah. He showed it.
And it's just gone, yeah. He's game's in a bit of a mess at the moment.
But is it? That's what I'm saying. And, you know, if that one final round last week, had that been a decent final round with no pressure on, he didn't produce it. You know, granted, he didn't produce that round to have the argument, but had he produced a 65, he'd have finished tied fifth with Koepka. He would be a much shorter price, and everyone would be saying, well, look, it looks like Sergio's found his form. It's that fickle. That line is so fine.
It's fine margin, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, if you don't pick him like a talisman of the European team, it's I think that could be quite psychologically damaging to the team.
There's an excellent thread on our Facebook group about it, and there's some very knowledgeable people talking about it. And people are saying a situation where Bjørn Olsen's going to be very hard not to pick, especially when he's Danish. And he's playing some outstanding golf, isn't he?
Yep. He's found his form. Found some consistency as well.
You know, there's a captain's pick. That then puts a scenario where you've got, if Casey doesn't qualify, Casey, Stenson and Garcia are all begging for a pick. So Casey's not too far away, is he? I mean, he was leading the Travellers for a long time before Bubba came and nicked it away from him. So I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? Can you see all three of those guys getting picks and Bjorn being the fourth? Interesting. But anyway, for me, Garcia needs to perform. So
yeah, he's got to pull his finger out. Absolutely,
yeah, he's got to pull his finger. Players that have kind of jumped out to me at bigger prices, and I'm looking, you know, triple digits and I'll get it. If that Garcia price is there tomorrow, I'd be tempted at 100 to 1, although it's only with Unibet, but he's drifting like a tug in the market.
Yeah, well, you can back him on the exchange at 150. I mean, wow. that's a big old number.
Players, are, others that I see at triple digits that interest me, Kevin Kisner. Yep. We know that he has no requirement for form, and then bang. Second at the Open. Great runner-up at Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass. He's also played very, very well at Harbour Town, which links in quite nicely.
Third at East Lake as well.
Yeah. Yeah, second. Was he second or third at East Lake?
Yeah, I've got third in my notes here, but you could be right.
He's a decent shot, 125 to 1.
Seems to lift his game for the majors. Certainly has done in recent times, hasn't he? Seventh in this last year as well, wasn't he?
Domestic stuff doesn't seem to interest him anymore, does it?
No.
So yeah, well, I'm seeing 110 with Bet365, 8 places each way. That's quite a tempting price. He's a short 66s with Paddy Power, 10 places each way. Mm. Oh yes, we should have mentioned this. 10 places each way available at Paddy Power this week, and also Coral. If you want a mix of prices and increased each way options, Bet365, also Boyle Sports are offering 8 places each way at 50 odds, as are Betfair Sportsbook. Another guy that shouts to me potentially is, you're going to hate this, is Rafael Cabrera Bello. He played quite nicely last week. Second, was he top 5 at the Players last year? He's also played well at St Jude on the Zoysia, so there's something to look into.
Yeah, he's stepped up his game, hasn't he? You can't deny that. He's a far better player than he was even a year or two back.
Would it surprise you if he got a top 10 at a major?
No, it wouldn't surprise me if he was first round leader at a major, by any stretch. It would probably surprise me more if he were to go on and really contend and potentially win one. But
it's different. I'll tell you the other one, and he finished like a train yesterday, Charles Schwartzel.
Yeah.
I'm seeing him at 140 to 1 with Bet365. And you look, as we said, he was second at TPC Sawgrass this year. He's clearly won around Augusta. He's got a good record at PGA National, the Honda Classic. He's played well at Quail Hollow. I can see some correlations with Quail as well, with Jim Furyk, and also with Anthony Kim, who won his first PGA Tour title at Quail Hollow. So yeah, I think there's worse bets. Also, Conway Farms, he's done well out of the past, and there's some correlation with that. There are worse bets out there than Charles Schwartzel, I think.
This Zoysia grass is more common over in South Africa as well, isn't it?
I think so. So yeah, they're the ones that are interesting me at big prices. You could also throw Daniel Berger into the mix. He was in the top, didn't he? He was in the last group at the US Open, wasn't he? And if you're looking at that Zoysia group, Zoysia link, he's won at TPC Southwind, isn't he? Two years on the bounce. So yeah, Berger, 150 to 1.
Another one who's caught my eye in the last few weeks is Keegan Bradley. And we know with Bradley, he's clearly won a USPGA in the past. And
he was, on Zoysia.
On Zoysia, yeah. That's AAC, wasn't it? 13th at the Greenbrier, where his long game, as you'd expect his long game to be, was right on point. Third for total driving, third for ball striking. Then fourth at the Canadian Open. Didn't play last week, but he finished fourth at the Canadian Open, where it was his short game. And this is where he's really always, we know the whole story with the putters and being forced to change to a short putter, etc. But he finished fourth at the Canadian Open. He was second for scrambling and fourth for putting average, with a putting average of 1.56, which for Keegan Bradley is not just noteworthy. That's just that's a huge number for him. And clearly he's got to tie those two together. But if he has a ball striking week where he plays on and around the greens like that, he's got to go incredibly close. And what did he shoot that week? He shot a 63 in one of the rounds, a 64 in the final round. It was only his third round, 73, preventing him from winning that tournament. And you're getting between 100 and 125 to 1 at the moment, depending how many places you take.
9 under 63 in round two, and then he backed up with an 8 under 64 in round four.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's on fire, isn't he, Brad?
Yeah. I mean, strokes gained tee to green for the season to date, he's sixth on the PGA Tour. You know, for a guy that, you know, on the headline form, apart from the Canadian, doesn't look that dramatic. Yeah, he's clearly, from tee to green, he's striking the ball, or has been striking the ball incredibly well. And if he has found something with a putter...
Did you ever read or hear what he's changed with the putter? Has he gone to this claw grip like Webb Simpson?
I've not seen anything specific in the setup. I need to dig into it to give you a definitive answer. But
something's clicked the last two performances.
Yeah, absolutely. For him to produce that kind of number... either it's a complete outlier or something's working that is to do with his setup, which, if that's the case, is a dangerous player. And again,
I'm cutting across you.
No, you're right.
Any other ones here? I thought Luke List is interesting at 125.
He's been backed as well.
Yeah, he has come in quite a bit. Now, look, whether he goes on to win is a different thing. But you know, that might be kind of a 125 top eight. I could see him getting a top eight for sure. It's a fun week, isn't it? In a way, like there's a little bit of guesswork involved. Yeah, because of the unfamiliarity of the venue, even though we have a few links, but.
Last year, Oosthuizen was 125-1 runner up. Molinari was 150-1. Patrick Reed was 110-1. Now, this is one of the majors in my mind where actually it's a little bit like Augusta, where you get more of the cream filling the places than like you would get at a US Open, for example. Because some years you're getting very few at triple digits actually turning up. But there are players in that kind of 100-1, 150-1 mark who are going to get in the mix in all likelihood. It's just picking the right bloody one.
Yeah.
Throw a dart at the board. This major's gone weird. I can't believe Sky dropped the ball on the rights for this. So now in the UK and Ireland, we're stuck having to sign up to this company called 11 Sports, who I'd never heard of before, to stream it online. And
not good.
I mean, it's a big unknown. New commentary team coming together. I'm not looking forward to it.
It's either going to be surprisingly good or it's going to be an absolute farce, isn't it?
Is it a UK commentary team that they pulled together, or is it they're just tapping into American commentary?
No, I think they've got it's Anna Whiteley and Dominic, the guy with the black hair. I can't remember his second name. So I think they have a few guys from the Golf Monthly or TV show. It's not people who don't know what they're talking about, but it's, you know, for them to be diving into doing their, you know, the first kind of TV production and it being a major is, it'll be interesting to see how they, if they sink or swim.
Yeah, it is a challenge. This proliferation of sports rights, not just golf. It's a challenge. It's a challenge for us, the consumer. Very much so.
I tell you what, I wanted to ask you guys before we wrap it up. What do you guys think of Xander Schauffele this week? I backed him last week and he was, on the face of it, it was awful. But we talked about him at the back end of the last major. In fact, we talked about him at the back end of both the last majors, where he's clearly raised his game. He's performed incredibly well. He could have easily won the Open Championship with a slightly better start on the Sunday, and he was in the mix. You know, he's still in with a chance coming right down the stretch. Yet he comes into this from, you know, he was nearly dead last week.
I think he's one of these. He's one of these young players that, you know, it's difficult to be consistent week in, week out, isn't it? But you know, he won at Eastlake, so he won his Oyster.
one at East Lake. You know, coming into the US Open.
He was second at the Players this year.
Yeah.
Second at the Players. There's two huge plus points, aren't there?
Yeah.
And Firestone has never... It's always a tough one to judge how guys are playing from Firestone, because some people get it and play well in it, and other people just don't. Mm. Or they took a couple of years or a couple of goes around the block to actually get the place. Mm. So, you know, that being, what was it? It was his first time playing it.
Yeah, it would have been. Yeah.
Was it?
It would have been his first, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know...
I wouldn't read too much
into it. I could almost kind of give him a free pass on that.
Yeah. I think from a tournament trend perspective of what we see of winners, he doesn't fit the bill, and I can't include him. But I would have absolutely... And this is the point, isn't it? I tipped up Bubba in Canada, missed the cut. You tipped up Xander last week, finished almost bog last. Yeah, it's sod's law that one of those, or even pretend, I mean, Sergio Garcia tipped him up and missed the cut. One of those three, if not more than one, are likely to get in the mix, and you'll be slapping your forehead after Thursday evening going, what the hell? Barry will be he'll be sending WhatsApp messages after the second hole going, oh, here comes Xander. For me, he's the kind of guy that I would back on the exchange just to cover him off, because you know he's the kind of guy that's going to piss on your strawberries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm undecided. I mean, there's quite a bit of difference between the bookies, you know, down from 35s up to 60s, depending on how you want to play it. But, you know, his recent major record, he's got three top sixes in his last five majors, something like that. It's a cracking record. Clearly capable. And coming into these majors where he's performed, he's not necessarily had outstanding incoming form. He'd missed the cut twice coming into the US Open last year, and he finished sixth. I think 52nd coming into the US Open this year and finished fifth. You know, there's nothing to suggest that he doesn't just hone his game, you know, take it easy the week before or the lead up to it, and then, you know, hits the ground running when he goes and plays these events that he's really targeted himself.
His form leading into the US Open, where he finished sixth this year, missed cut. He was 21st at the Greenbrier, and I think there were some good rounds in there, weren't there, Paul, before the Open where he finished second. But he isn't the kind of... He isn't your Justin Rose, where you're looking for a top five the week before he wins. He seems to be someone that can just pull something straight out of the bag.
Yeah.
I can't see this course not suiting him.
No. And he's absolutely friendless in the market at the moment. No one wants him.
That there, I think, is going to be a Wednesday Betfair potential back, you know, because you can only see that price.
Oh, yeah, you might see 80 out of that. He must be sitting at 70 at the moment, so you might see 80 plus. It's very tempting. Even how, you know, he let me down last week, that could be a bit of redemption there.
That's his way of apologising, putting in a good one.
I'll take that as an apology, Barry.
Yeah.
It happens, though, doesn't it? It happens all the time.
Indeed.
One key stat that just... I'll throw this in before we close. One key stat that kind of permeates a lot of the recent winners going for the green, on the PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. So Thomas was 19th. 8th was Jimmy Walker, the year he won. 4th for Jason Day. And Rory McIlroy was 1st for going for the green. And those numbers are as they turned up at the course. Yeah, they're not season-long numbers. That's actually a real number. Xander Schauffele, 12. So it's going to suit him, isn't it? A PGA setup suits a player of Schauffele's capabilities.
Yeah.
One that's niggling away at me that could come and haunt me is John Rahm. Thoughts?
Yeah.
I think the USPGA out of the four majors is the one that he's most likely to win first. I suspect he'll win a few over his career, but if he's going to break through, then the USPGA will probably be the one. The scoring level's about right for him, isn't it? It's not too difficult, but it's not too hard. It's scorable. I think it's right up his alley.
He nearly broke through. Everyone forgets he nearly broke through at the Masters. He was, what, 2-3 foot away from absolute perfection on 15?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
On Sunday. You know, so, yeah, look, I think Ram, classical kind of looking track.
As Paul said, he's kind of mid-score, 10 to 12, 13. That's his kind of game.
And with his power hitting as well, to like what you're saying, like cutting corners on the course, and three or four of those par fours could be almost drivable for him, depending on the if there's any wind or what tees they use on the day. But they're in the mid 300s range. A couple of them are even shorter. That kind of aggression could be highly rewarded this week.
Certainly, a lot of contenders out there, isn't it?
He was second for tee to green last week at the Bridgestone. So only Brooks Koepka was better. I think we found the winner. I think we found the winner, boys. John Rahm, unbacked, 25-1.
They certainly want to put in your mix for your DraftKings teams, I think.
He was close last week, wasn't he? We've all gone quiet.
Yeah, no, it's tricky. There's cases can be made across the board. What do you guys think about Tiger? I thought he'd go so much better last week at Bridgestone.
Yeah.
Was it almost like too much effort to get there or something? Yeah,
he's had another... After two rounds, you thought he's in prime position to go and push on and get his ninth win at Firestone. And given how he's performed there in the past, it's difficult to see against it, but it didn't happen, did it? He was particularly poor on Sunday.
I suppose when you're that far out of touch come Sunday, the focus goes.
Yeah,
and the head's definitely already at Bellerive when he's playing on the Sunday. So, his long game's in great shape.
Yeah, he just needs to tie it all together, doesn't he? But you're talking another one of these short price players, aren't you? And you can't back. More than one or two of these players.
This is the point. I'm sitting there this morning and I'm thinking there's two players in that top eight that I definitely want to back, and they're the two that I've gone for.
Yeah.
And then you look back, oh, I could have gone for Rahm, could have gone for Rose, because Rose is the sort, finished like a train at the Open, but then he didn't play Bridgestone, so that breaks that trend. But Rose is playing some good stuff, but he's got a back injury. And you can go through all of this kind of stuff, can't you? The only thing that does put me off Rahm is, of all those courses that I've mentioned seem pretty critical, he's either not played them or he hasn't, the players, he hasn't got on there at all well in his first two outings there.
Mm.
He did finish seventh at the Tour Championship though on Zoysia, so swings and roundabouts.
It's going to be a fascinating event, isn't it? We've not even touched on players like Francesco Molinari, who's playing the golf of his life. Can he bounce back after the Open Championship? Has he got that? Has he got the desire and the will to go out and really get stuck in again so early after winning his first major? Don't know. We shall see. Tommy Fleetwood's playing some better golf, isn't he? He went through a stretch not so long ago where he was battling with his swing a bit, but he seems to be pulling that around. Jason Day played well last week. Could have won last week, couldn't he?
Yeah.
Just didn't push on the Sunday. There's lots of players.
Jason Day's playing some... Do you know the thing that I noticed with Jason Day? He topped greens in regulation after 54 holes.
Mm.
And then he just seemed to mentally... I struggle selecting players, and just from a trend perspective when you look at... I struggle to pick players who struggle on the final day leaving the previous week at the Bridgestone.
Yeah. That isn't
a trend I like. I want someone that's actually showing something, yeah?
Yeah, you'd want some positive momentum coming into it rather than rather than a poor
the
Sunday.
The only one that breaks that is Keegan Bradley back in 2011, when I think he was almost, wasn't he leading? And then he kind of, bearing in mind, that was his rookie year.
Mm.
And he went and won the PGA Championship the week after, didn't he? After contending at Firestone.
Yeah.
He shot something crazy in the final round and then goes and wins it. But apart from, you look at the others, you know, McIlroy, Duffner, McIlroy, Jason Day, they've all had some momentum late on at Firestone, taking it to the PGA. And that, you know, that's what put me off Rahm ultimately.
Perhaps Schwartz was your man.
I think he's a decent shout at a big price.
They were far worse long shots.
Well, thank you for your time, gents. It's been a pleasure. We're back on the weekly podcast now. We'll be back next week for... What are you covering next week on the Euro?
Nordea Masters.
Nordea Masters, that's a decent event. I've got the Wyndham Championship. So we'll see you again next week, and I hope you all enjoy the PGA Championship. Thank you. Goodbye.